I'm Dan Smolin. I built a successful executive career in marketing and communications before becoming a top headhunter and founding my own executive search firm. Now get this, every day, mainstream media runs stories in which old school bosses and thought leaders frame your work and workplace issues in ways that are often divisive and unmeaningful. And that's just crazy. The time has come for you to answer the question, what's your work fit, so that your work and career fit who you are, how you want to live, and what you want your lasting contributions to be. What's your work fit? It answers your questions and tackles the issues that keep you up at night about advancing your career in this time of workplace revolution. So let's get started. Hey, good day, everyone. Dan Smolin here on What's Your Work Fit? I hope you're all doing well, and thank you for joining us today on the live show. It's going to be a lot of fun. We will get to our wonderful guests in a moment, but first, you know my ask. If you submit a future What's Your Work Fit show question, and we pick it for a future episode, you will get, with our thanks, this wonderful What's Your Work Fit baseball cap. It's our way of saying thanks. Now here's the rub. You have to submit a question. You can do it by emailing me at dan@dansmolin.com, or you can hit me up on instant messaging, certainly on LinkedIn, where I'm all the time, and post your question, your fever dream question, which is keeping you up at night about the work you do and hope to do, and also impacts your work fit. So that's my big ask for today. You all drive this show. Your questions, your wonderful questions, such as the one we're going to get to today from a viewer, drive the show, What's Your Work Fit? So that's what I'm going to say about that. Okay, we're going to get to our guest right now. Welcome. Where is she? Why are you there? There she is, Christine Basso. How are you?
Hi, Dan. I'm great. You know, I was really hoping you were going to be wearing that shirt with the bikes on it, the one you were wearing when I met you.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a little too casual. I got my uniform, my work shirt that I wear on What's Your Work Fit. But, you know, maybe if I do a live show outside of the studio, that would be really great to do.
It's conversation piece.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about Christine. She's my friend, first of all. She's also an esteemed life and connection coach who leads her clients to, and I love this, unapologetic self-acceptance and compelling relationships that unfold in the workplace and beyond. Coming to us today from Norfolk, Virginia, Christine Basso, welcome.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's awesome to be here. I mean, what a pleasure it was to meet you last month and to put a real laugh and a real personal face to our call today means a lot. Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. I enjoyed that meetup so much. You know, for many of us coming out of COVID, it was the first time we got to use people skills in 3 years. And so that was a lot of fun and a lot of laughs indeed. And we all made wonderful friends that hopefully will last our lifetimes, you included.
Yes, 100%. And, you know, a lot of people, like you said, had not ventured out yet after COVID. And I was one of those people. So that was one of the first events to be in real life, IRL, as everybody likes to say. Yeah. With people. And I was reeling off of that energy for days. First of all, I needed to come down from it and then come back up. And it was amazing. It really was.
If any of you have not been to Washington, D.C., or if you live around Washington, D.C. and have never been by the waterfront or haven't been there in 10 years, go do, explore, experience. It's wonderful. We had such a great time.
We did. And I'm originally from that area. So it was a little bit of a homecoming and then back to where I live now. So it was awesome.
Right. Like me, you spent your adolescent years in Montgomery County, Maryland, as I recall, right?
I did my young child years and my teenage years, and even through college while I went to UMBC up in Baltimore. So yeah, Maryland was home for a long time.
Before we get into the viewer question, I was wondering if you could tell me and our audience about the work that you do, Christine.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thanks for asking. Mm-hmm. So there are actually two sides to my business. I am a keynote speaker, and I'm also a life coach for experienced women. As a life coach, I inspire both career-minded and household CEO women to discover their worthiness and true purpose. And I'll tell you, there is nothing I'm more passionate about because I went through that myself. In addition, as I mentioned, the other side of my business as a keynote speaker, I share awareness about the unfortunate decline in the ways that we are communicating to connect and the results that leads to in how we give and receive care. So I offer tips and workshops to both my community and to small and medium-sized companies about how we can connect on deeper levels to build stronger teams at work and develop more meaningful relationships in our personal lives.
And that's why we're going to bring you back for future episodes, because all of those points are really mission critical right now, especially as more of us venture out, are connecting back with people in real life, as you said, IRL, in both a common workplace, but also just out in the world.
Yes.
And our communication skills have lapsed, and also our care and self-care has as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then we're going too far with self-care, and we're isolating. So instead of using self-care or picturing self-care as a way to refill our cups with people by communicating and connecting, we're doing it by ourselves. So that loneliness, you know, one of two adults is afflicted with loneliness, and that was released by the U.S. Surgeon General. So it's like, okay, what are we going to do here? And I absolutely love bringing up the hard conversations and letting people know it's okay. Because once we can connect on that one singular level, it changes everything.
I think everything you just said applies to the question we got today. And it's from Marley, who was remote working a lot and didn't, you know, being detached from people for a good portion of the pandemic experience, I think probably made her think a lot about the work that she does and hopes to do. So let's get to it. Marley, hey Marley, thanks for the question. She is a senior program manager at a life sciences company. And a few months ago, she read an article about a company that claimed to have replaced its managers with coaches. And I know you're going to talk about that, Christine.
Yes.
At first, Marley was absolutely terrified at the thought of such an organizational change, especially since she gets along so well with her hiring manager. But the question intrigues her, as there are days when her own work journey, her work fit, she believes, would be better and sooner realized if she had access to actual intentional career coaching. So Marley asks you, Christine Passo, can I replace my manager with a coach? How do you respond to her?
I say yes and no. And I will tell you why. So managers are essential. Managers come from the history of the business, of that industry. And a lot of managers have already been in that role before. They know what to expect and what might be coming down the pipeline, whether it's a sales team, a marketing team, you know, the IT team. They've been there. And then you have the coaches. The coaches are planners. They come in to help change the game in a positive way and lead a path for each person that is unique for them. And that, I think, is a huge dividing factor, where a lot of employees are looking for that today. They're feeling disengaged. So a third of employees at the end of 2022 were not engaged.
Right.
And that was the highest number to date. and they felt disengaged because they didn't feel supported by their managers. They didn't feel valued by the company. And that's where coaches come in and they say, guess what? I value you. You matter big time. And you matter so much that I want to help you carve out a path that will exceed even what you can do here at our company.
So Adriana Kovac-Bauer says, how about combining a manager for the hard chores of the job and a coach for the softer ones like work environment and engagement? What do you think of that?
That, I mean, that she basically took the words out of my mouth for what I just said. And that's true. And I mean, here's the hard truth that a lot of managers are uncomfortable having those softer conversations, getting a bit more personal. You know, they almost feel like there's a line between them and a therapist. And there absolutely is. But they'll stay five steps behind that just to make sure they don't get there. Where again, the coach can come in and is not afraid to have those conversations that touch deeper than what a manager is comfortable with. And I understand that. And that makes perfect sense. There's been so much argument about how managers are uncomfortable with those conversations and they're not showing up, especially the younger generations who are saying, I want a mission-driven company and I want to feel like I'm a part of this company, where managers, you know, the old school are just saying, just do your job. Well, there's a huge disconnect there. And so Adriana has the perfect point there. And I agree.
Yeah. And you bring up the point about younger workers, and it's really interesting because the younger workers are probably least averse to being in a co-location. And coincidentally, they often are the ones who speak up most about learning to be better leaders themselves. And to do that, they need to have the benefit of a coach to show them how to be autonomous at work.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they're big time seeking mentors. And I'll tell you, you know what's so interesting to me? So I'm admittedly a Gen Xer and super proud of it. You know, and really for decades, we have just had our heads down and done the work. Yes, we have been successful, you know, of course, just like other generations. But I think a lot of Gen Xers have felt the way that younger generations did, but we didn't have the space to say it. And I don't think we had the confidence to say it. So now with this evolution of management and leadership and the complete shift of culture, Gen Xers are saying, I agree and I'm in for it. At least I know I am. And I have talked to so many other people. So this movement is huge. And I do feel, and you know, I could go down for saying this, but I do feel that the companies that are not on board with these changes and to truly allow your company and culture and values to reflect in alignment, that they're going to have a hard trouble. They're going to have a hard time in the future.
Helena writes two parts here. First, she says part of being a people manager is coaching someone's performance, both what and how of delivering on targets and developing a person's skills, capabilities, and career path. And then she adds, coaches are usually brought in there if there are needs over and above a manager's capability and bandwidth. So to that last point, I mean, yeah, it's kind of, that article was kind of clickbaity, you know, replace your managers with coaches. Yeah, I get it. And they got a lot of readers, but on the periphery of that, when does it make sense to bring in the professionals to augment the work that headcount managers have to do every day? And in the case of Marley, I can't identify the company as a practice. I don't do it because I want to keep her sheltered from any criticism or whatever that might come about. But this life science company, they live by their, you know, stock performance, but also by their revenues. So everything is go, 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 do. And I got the sense from her that, I mean, she likes her manager, but the problem she has is that often she's left with a stack of things to do and doesn't have the feels, if you will, for how to get it done or to how to see it in a broader context. So to that end, Christine, when do you bring the professionals in to help with coaching?
You know, I think the days of when to do it, I think they're over. I think the time is now. I think the time has been now really for well over a year and probably even longer than that. I think that it having managers and coaches there together to work together with the team to really focus on their independent needs. So the coach, of course, they have their focus of what their conversation would be and driving engagement, and the manager with, you know, revenue and, you know, target numbers. It's very important. But I think having coaches at any company all the time will act again as that balance measurement that is causing a lot of questions right now. So we have people operations. They have their hands full. I mean, a lot of them are understaffed right now because people operations were some of the first teams to get laid off in the great layoff. And HR is a totally different ball of wax altogether.
Right.
And then you have leadership. So there is that balance missing. And I think that creates the perfect alignment for what a company needs.
So like you, former sales guy.
Yes.
You're a former sales professional.
Yes.
And threaded through my experience was consultative selling, which, you know, goes beyond selling something to offering a benefit or a solution to some vexing problem. That it's bigger than the thing that I'm trying to sell you. And somebody very wise once said to me, if your prospect is focused on the cost, they're not seeing the benefit. So let's talk about the investment value of all of this. When we invest in something, we have skin in the game, if you will, to see a positive benefit come out. We're not going to look at the cost of a bunch of people coming in or adapting new services as a cost, but rather as an investment in the future of our people to be leaders, to be intentional leaders so that they in turn can lead others. So how do we leverage all that consultative selling benefit that you and I grew up with and get the C-suite on board with this? What are your thoughts?
Honestly, it is such a no-brainer to me. And maybe it's just because I'm looking at this from a different lens. I mean, about as clear of a lens as possible. So when you have disengaged employees, most of them resign and they go someplace else.
Right.
So then there's the cost of interviewing, hiring, orientation. I mean, it's thousands of dollars. And then what happens if that's a leadership role? So you have a leader, a manager that is unfulfilled. They're getting too much, you know, they're managing too many people and maybe they're getting a lot of flack for not performing their job well. Well, then they leave. So that's an even higher price for hiring, recruitment, orientation, you know, onboarding. So when you factor in, first of all, that loss, and there are a lot of them, and there have been a lot of financial losses due to that. And with training, there's another one. So training, so leadership and development is it. I mean, you have to dig deep in your pockets nowadays to get trainers to come in, have consultant teams come in, train. But then what happens if just the leaders and the managers are trained and then half of them leave the company? Well, now you have to bring that consultant back. To bring that team back to go over. So if a company has a few coaches on board, treat them well, there's not as much turnover across the board. To me, that's a no-brain win-win.
So you bring up a hot burning insight that came out of studies done by the Gallup organization earlier this year. They've updated their study of workplace engagement. And while it's improved a lot in some parts of the world, here in the United States, engagement went from 33% a couple of years ago down to 31%. So it's gone retrograde.
Yes.
And to make matters worse, we now know that 59% of people who feel disengaged are quiet quitting. They actually put that in the survey and it's statistically valid. They went out with a big panel. And so 59% of the workplace is thinking about leaving. And then another 16% or so, they're loudly quitting. They're pounding the pavement to find something new or they're just saying, no, mas, I can't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is all very expensive, and it's avoidable. And really, if you think about it, and again, after my sales career, I spent 20 years in recruitment, and I'm fully aware of the investment value of people. They are mm-hmm. the most important asset a company has, mm-hmm. and they are expensive. But if you guide them right, you treat them right, and you teach them how to lead, and your coaching is intentional about it, mm-hmm. then your ROI more than makes up for any expense that was represented by bringing them in the first place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I read an article yesterday, I think it came out a week or two ago, from Fast Company, mm-hmm. and they're talking about well-being washing. Have you heard of this?
No, but you're going to tell me, and I'm here with rapt attention to learn.
I'm super excited to tell you. So really, well-being washing has been around for years. It's when a company posts their values on their website. And when you go through the recruitment process, they say, well, this is our culture and this is how we do it. And then you get into the company and none of those values are being practiced.
Right.
It's well-being washing. So that's the term for it now. I've just been saying the company's lying, you know, for years.
I mean, right.
Just call a spade a spade. But that is contributing to this issue. So you're hiring new employees and you get them in and they're like, no, this is not at all what I want to work here for. Again, I want mission driven. I want honesty. I want leadership that's going to guide me. And none of those things are happening. So then they become part of that percentage of employees that you just talked about that either leave or just collect a paycheck. And the company is throwing their money away there as well. So not even if they leave, but if they're just collecting a paycheck and doing the bare minimum versus somebody that is being coached and being led well by their manager and has clear career goals set through the coach and through the manager. Everybody's working together. I mean, I would stay at that company 100% because they're fulfilling not only my career goals, but my personal goals.
You know, words are cheap. And
yes.
20 years in recruiting, and I can't tell you thousands of job specs that I would get. And you'd get to the boilerplate where they describe the company. One of my favorites was, we're a big family. And I, out of frustration, I finally said to the hiring manager, when was the last time you were at a Thanksgiving gathering? Seriously,
right.
You really want to do that? But what ends up happening is that somebody, and I can't put this on the HR person, it's usually somebody in the C-suite, comes up with all this palaver that, you know, oh, we're this and we're that and we're, you know, we're virtue signaling and we're doing all this wonderful stuff. And then you get in and it's nothing like it. You know, my job as a recruiter was to try to cut through that because the last thing I wanted to do was burn a really good recruit, somebody who actually maybe I was friends with, from getting into a situation that was going to be an absolute train wreck.
Yes.
That doesn't have a really good ROI to do something like that. So you called it... Well-being
washing. Yes.
Yeah, we're going to put a hashtag on this playback, well-being washing, because I think that's really interesting. So Jim Murray kicked in an insight here, which I think, I love when our viewers do this. 2 weeks ago, sponsorship, last week, mentorship, this week, coaching. That's a three-legged table for workplace success. I think he's right about that. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, sponsorship, mentorship really to me is both the manager and the coach. Sponsorship, also the manager and the coach. I mean, again, and then to throw in coaching to agree with the argument from the article, you know, that I shared, I think it was about 2 months ago. It's the direction we're going. And you unknowingly set up your podcast that way. So I think that you were sending yourself a message that you weren't aware of.
the universe was telling me that, and I had to get the message, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
That came about kind of organically, and it really was a function of when people got scheduled for live shows.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked out beautifully, and thank you, Jim, for pointing that out. I want to get to Steve's point, which is that I thought this was interesting. Marley's question seems like it's rooted in frustration. And maybe the result of too much deliverables emphasis and not enough coaching. Well, I think Steve's right there. If everything, and especially if you're in a publicly traded company where mm-hmm. you're at the whims of equity holders, that's mm-hmm. got to be really difficult. And I've got friends that are in top 50 companies, and some deal with this and others don't. Mm-hmm. That's got to be, I think Marley is representative of some of the people out there having fever dreams about what's unfolding in the workplace on a day-to-day basis.
Well, you know, I think a lot of the influence comes from what we're reading. So the articles that are written, and on LinkedIn, there are posts everywhere about how important it is to be a good leader and how to manage your employees and your team. So, you know, we have that influence coming in from us and thinking, well, yes, that's what I want too. And then your company, like, as you mentioned, the C-level, they're up here saying, well, this is how, yes, this is what we're doing, but then it's not being done. And that is so common. And actually, I really do believe that the C-level, they really do think that's what's happening. They are so disconnected from what the stakeholders are actually going through and experiencing that they almost don't want to know the truth. And that's probably not true, but to then have to admit that what they thought is not what's happening with their company is a little bit of a gut punch. So that'll be difficult for them to swallow. I mean, I think that the majority of companies that might be approached and asked and say, hey, let me come in and assess your company. We can help determine how your leadership feels about leading their teams and how your stakeholders feel about leadership. A lot of them don't want that. And I can understand why.
So you made me think up a question, and it's really framed around one of the topics we're talking about this fall, which is a special themed live shows around workplace and what a muddled mess that whole concept is, A, because so many big companies have massive leaseholds that they're trying to hold on to, because if they abandon them, it's billions of dollars thrown away. Mm-hmm. And then you've got managers who are painted into a corner, if you will, and have to manage to the edicts of the up on high of the C-suite to bring people back in because it's good for them. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the talent, the professional talent out there, the career professionals who pre-pandemic would schlep into the office, you know, often if they lived around the DC area or New York area, many hours each way. So they were getting up early, getting home late, et cetera, and recognizing what that was doing to their own productivity.
Yes.
Here's where I'm going with this. Coaching feels to me like a necessity to help bridge the gap in understanding what it is for the hired talent to be successful versus what the C-suite feels they need to deliver. And a coach can help you navigate the, okay, they want me in the office X number of days a week, but why? Mm-hmm. And how do I answer that? If on Wednesday you want me in the office, but I'm going to be stuck in front of a screen doing Zoom videos, what's the point of that? Mm-hmm. I think a coach can, especially if they are seasoned and have had some of these experiences happen to them in their careers, it's just the right talent set to help hired talent overcome this stuff so they just don't fall into despair and say, oh, geez, I got to go in. They're telling me I got to go in.
Well, I think there's a couple ways to answer this. Because what happened, as you mentioned, during COVID, people really adjusted their lives. And they did, especially those that had an hour commute each way and traffic and the stress and those that are parents and trying to get to their kids' games or pick them up from school. The convenience now to work from home is preferable to a lot of people. Actually, I think hybrid is the most preferable to people, mm-hmm. just depending. I've always preferred to work from home. But I think, as you mentioned, there needs to be a purpose, and it could be a coach that creates that purpose to be back in the office. It's not just virtual meetings, that there is a reason to be in the office. And, that's a tough thing to balance too, because there are some people that are still working from home and aren't going into the office. So you can't cut virtual off altogether.
No.
But perhaps by having a coach in the office that is there to help that employee plan as they go along. First of all, there's a purpose. Oh, I'm going to see the team coach today. We're going to talk about this, this, and this. And that just might be enough. And especially if the manager's in there, you get those days to have real team meetings and conversations and create that true purpose versus you go in and all you do is hang out on virtual meetings. I mean, that to me is a waste of gas.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. And I want to see if we can flesh out these ideas, because, one thing I've learned ever since COVID is I don't know what I don't know. And I think a lot of people are discovering that as well. We are at a point right now, especially with so many of us working at least hybrid, mm-hmm. that we have to be very aware of what's happening right now so that we can learn from what we're experiencing, make better decisions about when and where we do work.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, I think most people just want to do really good work.
Yes.
They want to be proud of their accomplishments. And, we never had to think about venue before. At least a lot of us didn't. I mean, mm-hmm. I've been working virtual for over 25 years, but a lot of people haven't. And their lives are a lot more complicated than mine because of it.
Yes.
So coaching may in fact be paired with sponsorship, paired with mentorship, a really important value set going forward to help people be really successful and in the end, find their own work fit. So before I get to my final question to you, Christine, I just want to give you an opportunity to point our listeners and viewers to you, to your social media, so that they can learn more about you and perhaps start a conversation. Where would they find you?
Oh, that would be so great. First of all, I love new connections. I have spent 8 or 9 months now connecting with new people on LinkedIn, in particular LinkedIn and in my local area, and I am learning so much. So if you like to learn and you want to teach me, please, let's connect. So my website is christinepasso.com. Hopefully that's easy enough. Mm-hmm. And I'm also on LinkedIn, Christine Passo. And I do have my coaching page on Facebook as well. So I can be found on all three channels.
And we will put that information in our show notes for our audio podcast. And also when we promote the playback of this video exchange. This has been so much fun, my friend. You are the best, and you're going to come back. I know it. We're going to get you back on many, many, many more times. Okay, this is the question I've been eager to ask you. So what's your work fit? What attribute, condition, experience, place, or state of mind makes work a wonderful part of your day doing other wonderful things and not the all-consuming time suck of a day? So what is it, Christine Passo? What's your work fit?
Well, I'll tell you, I spent about 20 years in the time suck of a day. I really did. I got caught up in that. Just go with routine and keep my head down, but get my job done as well as I can and collect a good paycheck and have a good living. And I hated it. It never felt right. So for me, it has to be about self-belief and purpose. And purpose really, a lot of people are using that word now.
Mm-hmm.
But my purpose is to share awakenings and awareness with as many people as I can in a day. Because again, as I mentioned earlier, we have a hard time talking about the tough stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just takes one connection to make that happen. And it changes lives. It changed my life. And to know that I possibly will have that kind of influence on other people that are seeking it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have goosebumps. I mean, I barely have any hair on my arms, but if I did, you would see it. And it's the most impactful thing I could ever do in my life. So to believe in yourself, or I believe in myself, and what I do every day is the most powerful, powerful part of my life.
Wow.
I know.
That's intense. Wow. No wonder you got the goosey bumps.
And I got a little heated.
Christine, thank you so much. You are a really good friend. And again, I'm so grateful that we finally got to meet up in real life. And I am so looking forward to continuing our conversations here on What's Your Work Fit. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Dan. You absolutely are a true gift and a pleasure to be friends with. Thank you.
Thank you.